We're in Hebrews 8. We finished Hebrews 7 last week. And I guess talking about my birthday, a bunch of people made comments that I got a pretty decent birthday present this year. So, yeah, you guys can put two and two together maybe. Maybe 4 years of a decent economy and at least some amount of morality held to. So, yeah, but we're going to start by reading Hebrews 8, 1 through 6. And then I did close last week by your I gave you guys homework. I don't know if you guys remember that. Not anything too difficult. All I basically said is have something maybe in mind that you could bring this week to use as a highlight or something you've learned through Hebrews so far. But we're going to start by reading Hebrews 8, 1 through 6. It says, now the main point what has been said is this. We have such a high priest who has taken a seat at the right hand of the throne and majesty in the heavens, a minister in the sanctuary and in the true tabernacle, which the Lord pitched, not man. For every high priest is appointed to offer both gifts and sacrifices, so it is necessary that this high priest also have something to offer. Now, if he were on earth, he would not be priest at all, since there are those who offer gifts according to the law, who serve a copy and shadow of the heavenly things, just as Moses was warned by God, when he's about to erect the tabernacle, for see, he says, that you make all things according to the pattern which was shown to you on the mountain. But now he's obtained a more excellent ministry, as much as he is also the mediator of a better covenant, which has been enacted on better promises. All right, perfect. So we will get to that. But I want to start first by kind of doing a little bit of recap. You'll see it really is probably necessary. It's also good just to see if we remember as much as we thought we did. Maybe we don't remember as much as we thought we did. I don't remember as much as I would like. I don't remember as much as I thought I remembered. But what are some highlights? What are some things that have stuck out to you in the book of Hebrews thus far? And this is where I would like to get some feedback. We're going to kind of work our way through some stuff, recapping though as well. What are some things that have really just stuck out to you or that you thought maybe were a significant theme? Or maybe it's something that you have known for a while and you're like, yeah, this has been very significant. Or maybe it's something new. Maybe it's something you learned and you're like, I never really noticed this theme. I never really noticed that this was something that comes up time and time again. For one that I'll actually throw out there that I was just actually noticing this as I would go through the book as a whole, is really the significance put on the sonship of Jesus. He's a son. He's a son. He's appointed a son, made perfect forever. Talks about him being a son a lot. But yeah, let's see what you guys got. And maybe I'll just stand up here awkwardly for a few minutes, since you guys sang to me and I had to stand up here awkwardly. Okay, two oaths. I'm going to hit some people with the mic.
He was made lower than the angels for a while when he walked on earth during his ministry.
Okay, yeah. So we see something that was really significant in the beginning, right? Jesus was made lower than the angels as a man, more specifically.
I like the study of Melchizedek. Excuse me. And just kind of tying together the promises and you know the covenants and when they are enacted or enabled and yeah, so the study of Melchizedek was pretty cool.
Yeah, Melchizedek's been in the Bible since Genesis 14, and that's what he's telling him. He's like, this guy's been around for a while. Mike, you had something?
I like the fact that we looked at the two oaths.
Yeah, and do we all remember what the general consensus was on those? I don't want to put anybody on the spot. Remember that the two unchangeable things. Oh, the two changeable things, yeah.
On the flip side of Super Dave's, the emphasis of that Jesus is higher. of as we go through all those things of whether it's the angels, his priesthood is higher.
Yeah, everything is about Jesus being elevated, right? Which is really important. That's basically, if you guys remember Hebrews chapter 1, that's what I was saying is kind of the theme of Hebrews is Jesus is above all. Jesus is supreme.
I think what's really cool is when you look at the two unchangeable things and you see how Galatians plays out on the emphasis on the promise and that Jesus to the Gentiles wasn't in the flesh but was through the Holy Spirit who they were to receive, who would believe in him. And so you see Galatians really emphasizing the promise of the Spirit, which is we see that in Hebrews. The other unchangeable thing being the priesthood. And so it, to add kind of on to what Jacob's saying is, you know, when we went through chapter 7, it just reinforced the things that we found in the end of chapter 6. And so Hebrews is trying and does a great job of elevating the priesthood. So the thing that I particularly enjoyed, knowing that the unchangeable things are being highlighted here, is you did an excellent job communicating and teaching us that Levi, who through the law receives the tithes, but paid tithes to Melchizedek before he was even born, yeah, through Abraham. And I thought you did an excellent job explaining that. So that was, I like that.
Appreciate it. Mark?
I'm in Hebrews 5:4, where it says, "And no one takes the honor to himself, but receives it when he is called by God, even as Aaron was." Aaron going into it with Moses didn't, I don't think, or at least I don't see anywhere where he had foreknowledge, he may have, that he was going to be the high priest in the lineage. But more importantly is when the garments were made for him and that they were for beauty and for honor. And that's kind of what happened to Jesus when he was crowned with glory and honor. And each one of us who are called by God, we get to get clothed, and so we have that honor too. It's not something that we go out seeking. It's something that's bestowed to us, just like it was bestowed on Christ.
Yeah, there's a big emphasis there on humility. And we're clothed with Christ, which is righteousness, right? Any other comments that you guys would like to? This is good stuff. Kevin? Jared?
Just appreciate that you took the time in chapter 7 there where it talked about if perfection was through the Levitical priesthood, and you made us think that through. Why does it say Levitical priesthood? Most people haven't thought of that. And why does it just go to Aaron? Because Moses served as the first priest, and he was from the tribe of Levi. So that was a great point you made.
Yeah, I stole that, so it's not my original idea.
Well, kind of echoes a lot of what Kevin was saying, but the fact that Hebrews 7, when it talks about that perfection through the Levitical priesthood was not found there, he ties that together with later on, and that you're going to cover probably tonight with the copy and of the heavenly things, that this reminds us that God's plan has always been the church, and he always meant to bring it about this way, and that the letters or the laws written upon stones were never going to be able to accomplish the perfection that's required in order to be a part of the kingdom.
Yeah, exactly. Lots of really good, deep stuff that maybe you wouldn't just think of in mainstream Christianity, right? Lots of stuff that we're really getting to dive into and look at. And I actually want to kind of go through, you'll see why, I want to kind of go through and recap a lot of stuff that we've already talked about, maybe within 10 minutes framework, and then we'll get into chapter 8. But you'll see why, because he's really, you have to remember Hebrews is also, and I've actually researched this a little bit. I guess I can't just say this is absolute gospel, so I'll be careful. But Hebrews, which this is actually pretty common amongst a lot of letters, it was written as a sermon. So it would be like a sermon, essentially. So then you get to this point where somebody is at Hebrews chapter 8, and he's going to make a very definitive point. There's a reason why. But there's a reason why Hebrews, he's building one block on top of another, because he's trying to get to chapter 8, you know, 9. He's getting to those places, which we're at now. But we can't forget what were the steps that it took to get there. What was he trying to build off of? What is he actually trying to work towards? So this is where, actually, tonight, if you're thinking maybe you've missed too many classes, or you're not, you know, like me, maybe you just have had lots of stuff on your mind with the election and different things. You forgot a lot of it, maybe. Maybe this will be good just to do a little bit of recap on some things as well. So, Hebrews chapter 1, I'll let you guys kind of guide me through this. And it's already been mentioned tonight. What is really being driven at in the first chapter? What is really, Hebrews, he starts and he starts off making these really fundamental points, which are really going to be expounded and explored as you go throughout the book of Hebrews. What's really the big deal in Hebrews 1? I've heard one person.
Christ over the angels.
Yeah, Christ over the angels, right? So the beginning, at the very beginning, he, even in the first few verses, which we looked at this in depth, he mentions a few things that are going to be found throughout the rest of the book of Hebrews. But one of the big things that he's mentioning in Hebrews chapter 1 is that Jesus is above the angels. Now, if Jesus is above the angels, then he must be pretty high up there, right? Because most people, when they would see angels, their interaction would be, whoa, I need to bow down and worship these things. And they're like, no, you don't worship me, unless, I mean, Satan, he wanted that. But Jesus is above the angels. Now, there's a couple reasons why this is really important. And we took a look at those. What would be so significant? Why is this guy, whoever wrote Hebrews, really driving the point home that Jesus is above the angels? I guess it's turning more into a Q&A, but I really want to make sure we're not just forgetting too much. Or I'm just more, not even forgetting, I want to make sure I remind you guys of some things. Why is it so important that Jesus is above the angels? Obviously, we understand. There's two reasons I'm looking for. The first one's kind of the cliche answer, but Kevin?
First, chapter 1, you know, chapter 1 says, I'll just read it because I don't want to mess it up, but he says, God, after he spoke long ago, and he goes through that whole deal to the fathers and the prophets in many portions, many ways, in these last days has spoken to us, and his Son, whom he has appointed heir of all things, through whom also he made the world, and he goes on. He said he's now speaking to us through the Son, and he's going to begin to contrast Jesus to the law and that whole thing. And what comes out for me is Galatians, where he says, the law was delivered through the agency of angels. The new covenant's coming through the agency of the Son.
Yes, that's one of the reasons we looked at that, right? Jesus is bringing this new covenant. The Galatians 3:19 and Acts chapter 7, what do they mention? The law was ordained by angels, given through angels by the agency of a mediator. But Jesus is bringing a better ministry. So he's over the angels, thus he is ordaining a better ministry.
Well, and just, I don't know if that's what you're looking for, but it's very easy, and we see it in the world around us where people worship angels. And in Colossians 2, it says, don't worship angels. Angels aren't worthy of worship. No one defraud you. Jesus is the only one worthy of worship. So I don't know what's driving at. But.
Yeah, that was the other one we talked about. I think that's Colossians 2 you mentioned. So Jesus, that's the kind of the basic answer maybe that we might gravitate towards. If Jesus is above the angels, then Jesus is King and Lord of all. And if Jesus is Lord of all, what's the conclusion we can draw from that? He is Lord of all. He is Lord of all people, whether they even realize it or not. You know, I don't want to go too far down the election talk, but you know, lots of good things went our way in Montana, right? Lots of good things. Lots of good things happen in the nation, but there's also lots of sadness too. You notice the abortion stuff. That stuff just gets rejected. And, I mean, it's kind of, you understand it probably is going to happen. but it is kind of sad, right? The thing is that most people think that it's everything is the world revolves around them. Every choice is their choice. Everything is revolving around themselves, right? And they are the God of their own life. They are the maker of their own destiny, if you will. I guess you have free will, so you can make bad and good choices. But the reality is that God, He is the owner of all. He is above all. And where God is the king, He makes the rules. What God actually, if God values human life, then guess what? It doesn't matter whether you think human life is important or not. We value those things as well. So that's why this is also really important. Number one is that Jesus is above all else and what He says goes. But number two also, which is where he's going to get in the context of Hebrews, is that the law of the Old Testament came through angels and Moses, right? And the new one comes through Christ. And if Christ is better than the angels, then his new law is much better than that law. The law of Christ is much better. So Hebrews chapter 1, Jesus is above the angels. Then we get into Hebrews chapter 2. Now remember, there's a theme in Hebrews that is very evident. And actually, no, I guess nobody mentioned it tonight, which is probably, it's not necessarily a bad thing because this is not necessarily the most positive message that we get from Hebrews. But what's something that is a very strong theme in Hebrews that gets introduced in the first couple of verses? Okay. Christ freed us from death. Yeah. Okay, that's a theme that does come in. This one is more of a be cautious one. Dave, Super Dave? Yeah, because of why?
You don't fall away.
Yeah, we don't want to fall away, right? Hebrews brings this theme in, and he's just bringing a reality in. He's not saying that they are going to fall away. He's just telling him it's possible to fall away. Now, I don't want to, again, spend too much time doing too much recap, but he does, as Super Dave mentioned, he says, we must pay much closer attention. You got to pay close attention. And I cannot help but think about driving. There are times I get distracted or whatever, and then I'm thinking, like, I'll look down or I'll look over, and I'm like, whoa, like, I'm about to run off the road. I could have had an accident. You know, something crazy could have happened. I remember driving from through Wyoming from Denver to Billings one time, and, yeah, I was being really smart this time, and I had one hand on the wheel. It was winter, and I was looking at my phone with my other hand, and I was going 70, okay, in Wyoming, which everybody knows in Wyoming, there's those drifts. They just bring icy patches in certain areas. And I looked up. It was a little bit too late. I hit an ice patch going 70. And guess where the trajectory of my car was going? Straight off of the road. I literally did this number, and then I was going straight off the road. Guess what the Lord provided for me? There was an off-ramp because it was right near a bridge. So I literally, when I was about to go off the road, there was a place for me to literally go down and then come back up onto the highway. The Lord protected me, okay? But what my point is that you got to pay attention. If you're not paying attention, that's when bad things happen. We have to pay close attention to what we've been listening to through the study, through all of the studies, through the scripture, because when we stop paying attention, this is when we are subject to drift. That's what he's really getting at there. And one of the big things that comes up in chapter 2, okay, chapter 1, it's very clear that Jesus is above the angels. He's above all else. Chapter 2, though, kind of paints a different picture. Not saying they're contradicting one another. He's painting a different side of Christ. What's the picture painted in chapter 2? Jesus is above the angels in chapter 1. Chapter 2, we see him as, for a little while, lower than the angels. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean that he's less significant or less holy? Yeah. So that, yeah, so it doesn't mean he's less holy. It doesn't mean he's less important. What it means is that he was a man. He was for a little while lower than the angels. He was a man. Philippians says that he emptied himself, right? He emptied himself. And so he was a man. Now, why is this so encouraging is the question. Because later in chapter 2, he's going to introduce something, which we're getting to in chapter 8, which we've been covering in chapter 7. In chapter 2, he says Jesus was a man. And why is that so encouraging to us? Okay, he was like us, right?
And he wasn't afraid to call us brother.
Exactly. Yes, he's not afraid to call us brother. He was made like us in all things. And he, this is where chapter 2, which this is a very key theme to the book of Hebrews. If you catch one of the major themes of Hebrews, you have to catch this one. Jesus is our high priest. Chapter 2 is where this gets explicitly mentioned the first time. It's kind of referred to, or it's hidden already in chapter 1. Chapter 2, he says Jesus was a man. He was made like us in all things, right? And that is encouraging because we understand. Let's just read it, actually. Chapter 2, verse 17. Therefore, Jesus had to be made like his brethren in all things so that he might become a merciful and faithful high priest in things pertaining to God to make propitiation for the sins of the people. For since he himself was tempted in that which he has suffered, he is able to come to the aid of those who are tempted. Again, we discuss that a lot too. This is not just so Jesus can understand what we're going through and now he's like, oh, now I get it. Now I see why you guys are struggling. So he did this really for you to understand that he understands. We understand that Jesus understands. And he also was going to be offered as a sacrifice. So this is where the death comes into it. But that's encouraging because one of the things that I remember Larry Miller mentioned on the study of Hebrews is that it does have this picture of the relatability of Jesus and the way that he relates to us. And he did. He became a man. I mean, Jesus came down as a man, and he didn't come down as Elon Musk or, you know, Jeff Bezos. He didn't come down as somebody who is unapproachable, if you will, who just had endless resources physically. He came down, and he basically was a part of a carpenter's family. You know, I'm a son of a carpenter too. So he was the middle class, or I guess maybe even lower class in some pictures. But yeah, this is really going to be encouraging. So let's keep moving. Chapter 3, we see more about the high priest, right? The high priest is explored a little bit more. Who is Jesus above in chapter 3? This is very significant to a Jewish audience. Yeah, a couple people mouthed it, and I heard it said, Moses, right? I'm not even going to try to emphasize it any more than that. Moses is very significant to the Jew. Matter of fact, their law is called what? The law of Moses. Now, Moses, chapter 3, there's something very specific that's said about him. He was a servant of God's house. Now, this is the house, not like Solomon's temple house. What house would this really be?
Us.
Yeah, us, right? Did you say God's house? That would be the people, right, of God. Okay, Moses was a servant or an attendant to the house of God. So he was... He did servant things, right? And Jesus was obviously a servant too, but Hebrews 3 says that Jesus is a what? This is kind of a theme I've noticed too as I've gone through Hebrews. Yeah, he was a faithful son. Yeah, yeah. He was a son, which is implying that he has what over the house? Authority and ownership, right? So we started studying. I haven't really kept up with the kids quoting that well as much as I should be. Mr. Toole has, and you know, they've been quoting through Galatians. In Galatians chapter 4, the quoting for this week, it says something very interesting about a son, which is an heir of a household. And it says, he's not differing from a slave, really, although he is owner of everything. Jesus is the Son of God. What is he really? And actually, in the beginning, it says he's heir of all things. So Hebrews tells us that Jesus is better than Moses. Moses was just a servant attending to the... And Jesus is a servant as well. But Moses was just the servant. He was just the guy maintaining the property.
Yeah.
You know. And Moses was a big deal to the Jew. But he's just a servant. Jesus is the son. And he is the heir of that house. He's the owner of it. He's the owner of all. Again, you just see the writer of Hebrews is just painting this really cool picture. And the high priest is really emphasized in chapter 3. We're going to pick up the pace here a little bit. Chapter 4, what is something that Jesus brought and brings that even Joshua could not bring? Which, you guys remember what Jesus, the name Jesus means? I might have actually kind of, yeah. It's Joshua, right? Yeshua is from Joshua. So it's just a kind of cool wordplay there, right? They're related, at least. One's really Greek, Hellenized. But so Jesus, he gives us what Joshua could not. What was Joshua supposed to be giving to the people? He was supposed to bring them into the promised land and give them rest. And they did come in. They had some sort of rest, right? But the writer of Hebrews says it wasn't the full rest that Jesus brings. And we look forward to the Sabbath rest yet to come. So, again, Jesus is just above all of these things. But one thing that does come up in chapter 4 again, which now we've seen this in chapter 2, chapter 3, and chapter 4, and let's actually look at chapter 4, verse 14. Therefore, since we have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold fast our confession. For we do not have a high priest who cannot sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who has been tempted in all things as we are, yet without sin. Therefore, let us draw near with confidence to the throne of grace so we may receive mercy and find help in time of need. What is made reference to again in chapter 4? The high priesthood of Jesus. High priest, high priest, high priest. See how he's just been layering this in there. I'm just kind of going back to recap some things, hopefully remind you, and then show you some of this along the way as well. Chapter 5. Who liked chapter 5? A lot. I like chapter 5 a lot. What is super significant about chapter 5? All of it's significant, but... And pertaining to what we're talking about. Yes, Jesus is a high priest according to the order of Melchizedek. And he does want to talk about him a little bit more. He just hadn't got to it yet. I want to tell you guys about Melchizedek, but he gives him a chapter and a half or whatever to get to that point. So, chapter 5, he talks more about the high priest again. Chapter 6, what is chapter 6, the beginning, really driving at? We're going to rapid fire through this one. Grow up, okay, yeah, yes. Look past the elementary things, right? The elementary teaching. Don't get stuck on just the spiritual, the baby milk, right? You got to get to the meat. I was talking with Mrs. Miller today. Steak is one of my favorite meals. My son, his favorite food is steak. This kid loves steak. We chop it into really small pieces so he can just, you know, basically suck on it or whatever. This kid, he's putting the next piece in his mouth before he's even swallowed the one before it. And we have to, like, basically put our hand and stop him because he's just, he loves steak so much. I like steak a lot, too. My birthday is also today, so just in case you wonder. No, I was kidding. But Jesus, through the writer of Hebrews, is telling them they need to like steak as well. Because the meaty stuff is the stuff that's actually going to make a difference. Lots of people, they're stuck on the spiritual cotton candy. The spiritual cotton candy that Jesus died for you, and which again, it's not bad. This is the good stuff. But if you just get stuck on Jesus died for your sins and that you need to be immersed, and that's all that the depth of your understanding of the Bible is, you're probably going to lose attention, I guess, at some point. You need to dive in more. You need to understand more of why, how this works. You need to dive more into the Scripture. And that's what he talks about. If we just get stuck on the elementary things, you know, the basic 101, Acts 2:38. If Acts 2:38 is the depth of your understanding of the Bible, you're missing out on a lot. Let's just say that. There's a lot that you're missing out on. There's lots of good, encouraging stuff. And this is not just to beat us over the head and be like, what are you, you know, this is, you're missing out on so many good things. There's so much more to the Bible than just that. So chapter 6, he talks about there's better things. We talked about the two unchangeable things, the promise that was given even back to Abraham, the fact that the blessing of Abraham would be given to all nations, which was the Holy Spirit, and I'm kind of going rapid fire here, and then the priesthood by the order of Melchizedek. Chapter 7, two words. What is the majority of chapter 7 really about? And you might be able to look at the... this is a hard question because... what is chapter 7 really about? High priest, Melchizedek, high priest, right? You guys get the point. So now we're at chapter 8. And I want to do all of that reminding because I wanted to get chapter 8, verse 1. So now we're in chapter 8, verse 1, and he says, and remember, think of this maybe even as a sermon. Every sermon, you get to a point in the middle of it where there's like a climax, right? There's a point at which somebody's building to, and you're like, oh, they've been putting all these little, you know, nuggets along the way, and they've been building to something. And so chapter 8, verse 1, now the main point in what has been said is this. And the people have to sit on the edge of their seat. They're probably wondering what he's going to say. The main point of what has been said is this. We have such a high priest. We have a high priest who has taken his seat at the right hand of the throne of the majesty in the heavens. We talked about this a lot in chapter 7, so I'm not going to take you guys back through that a lot more. But you know, it is nice that, you know, it is nice that Trump won, okay? It's nice that Harris lost mostly. That would be a dumpster fire. But it is nice that certain things God has extended some amount of, you know, freedom in this country for a little bit longer. But at the end of the day, I was thinking about people in North Korea and people in lots of other places that are much more, you know, because we live in a very blessed society, so we always think like, you know, we have so much freedom, but it's not ever going to go away. We kind of almost have this vision in our mind like, well, as long as we keep fighting, and it's true, as long as we keep fighting, it'll never go away, but the reality is America is going to end eventually. And if that's not, it might be, Lord willing, till Jesus comes back. You know, at least we can maintain freedom till then. But the reality is, regardless of whether it's still Jesus or not, America will end eventually. And I was thinking about how, as Americans, we can kind of adopt this mentality of maybe apathy, right? Kind of, you know, everything's so abundant and so easy. Yes. There are bad things about our government. Inflation is terrible. But at the end of the day, you can go to 100 different stores. You can order stuff on Amazon. You can pretty much get anything you want. If you can't afford it, it's okay. We got a credit card for you. You're good. There's so many things you can do in America, right? And then we think about, I was thinking about people and their reality, present day, not like some weird futuristic scenario or even back going to the Christians of old. I was thinking present day, there are places in the world where it's illegal to be a Christian. And what would be really encouraging for the person who's in North Korea? What would be really encouraging for a person who's Christian in China? Or you name a bunch of different places, right? Even some Middle Eastern ones. What would be encouraging for that person? It's not that Trump won the election. They don't care. They might not even know. What they care about is that Jesus is seated on his glorious throne and he is the high priest, and that's the only thing that matters. At the end of the day, which we've already driven this home, but at the end of the day, if I said, what's the most important thing that could happen to you? Hopefully it's not Trump winning the election. And, you know, there's lots of things that maybe you might think of. The best thing, the best case scenario of something that could happen to me is I could win $10 million. You know, that would be, because I could give, you know, to the congregation, I could give to my family, I could pay off debt, whatever. Or, you know, even more realistic, right? Maybe the best thing that could happen to me is I could have a better chance to have a good relationship with my grandfather. Or I wish that my lost child could come back. I could have more time with them. There's lots of things that people paint in their minds as the best case scenario. The best case scenario that could ever happen is that Jesus reigns and he is our high priest and king. This is what's so cool about Hebrews, and the main point is this, is that we have such a high priest. The best case scenario happened is what I'm trying to say. The best thing that could ever happen has happened. What more could you want than Christ reigning as high priest and king? That's what he's been building up to this in Hebrews. And this is why it's so important that we spend time in the scripture, we spend time studying, we spend time thinking about heavenly things, because the reality is this world is not our home. The reality is that Jesus reigning is the most important thing. Sometimes it's really hard because we're humans. We're down here on this earth, and we see things physically. We hear things, we smell things, we feel things, and so it can be distracting. And everybody else, all of the herd mentality is telling you, get distracted by the here and now. The herd is usually wrong. If they're not focused on God, they're always wrong. What he's telling them at this point, the main point of what he's been working up towards, is that we have such a high priest. The best thing that could happen has happened. This is what he's driving home. So we'll close on a couple more thoughts just here on these first couple of verses. We looked at Jesus being at the right hand of the throne of majesty in the heavens, which means he's reigning. He is the power of God, if you will. He is the power. He is the right hand. He's a minister. What does minister really communicate? He's serving, right? He's serving. And pertaining to the whole point which we've been building on is that Jesus is our high priest. He is ministering as a high priest. He's ministering. Let me draw a picture real quick. He's ministering in where? Where is Jesus ministering? In the sanctuary. Now that is this part of the building right here, right? No. That's not a bed with a pillow, okay? Although it does look like that. This is going to be the tabernacle. There's a lampstand, something like that. Now, the sanctuary means a holy place, right? That's what the word means, holy place. In the modern literal version of the Bible, they actually translate this to be, he's a minister in the Holy of Holies. Now, it is holy place. Literally, it's holy place. But why would we assume that Jesus is serving in the Holy of Holies? Okay, yeah. There's two things I heard, and those are the two things I wanted to hear. Remember when Jesus went through as the sacrifice, what was torn from top to bottom? The veil, right? So number one, this is, they're now conjoined. The presence of God is now made available to even the priest, which we'll cover that probably in chapter 9, the tabernacle a little bit. But the other thing that we've been building on in this whole Hebrew study is that Jesus is not just a priest, he is what? The high priest. And his one sacrifice, which I'm jumping ahead of myself in Hebrews, his one sacrifice is presented before whom? Who does he go before? God, right? He goes before God. Now, the high priest goes into the Holy of Holies. This is the picture in which he is really going before God to make atonement on behalf of the people of Israel. We didn't get to look at Leviticus 16. The high priest goes to the actual mercy seat of God. Jesus is our high priest. Where does he go? In the presence of God. And when he had made propitiation for sins, then he sat down at the right hand of God. And let's just close by looking at Hebrews chapter 9, verse 11. But when Christ appeared as a high priest of the good things to come, he entered through the greater and more perfect tabernacle that is not made with hands, that is to say, not of this creation. And not through the blood of goats and calves, but through his own blood, he entered the holy place once for all, having obtained eternal redemption. For if the blood of goats and bulls and ashes is a heifer sprinkling those who have been defiled, sanctified for the cleansing of the flesh, how much more will the blood of Christ, who through the eternal Spirit offered himself without blemish to God, cleanse your conscience from dead works to serve the living God? Jesus is in the actual true sanctuary, not a sanctuary that man could make. And then he says a tabernacle, the true tabernacle. And in chapter 8, he says it's the one that the Lord pitched, not man. Where does Jesus go to? He went into the heavens. He went to the presence of God on behalf of us. This is going to be really cool. Chapter 8, we're going to be able to go further into this, explore this a little bit more, and then we're going to also talk about the greater ministry that Christ brings. So thanks, guys.